Look at you. Look at you over. Look at you over on that side.
Some things are better on other. Sometimes you have to.
Weird.
You have to look like that. Is this like?
Yeah, so you're, not, like you're looking the wrong way. You're
oh, sorry.
There you go.
The Brady Bunch.
How are you? How's your sanity? I know that. I think both of our workloads are a bit difficult. We were just talking about auditions earlier. That I wanted to say, I'm ready to go back to auditioning in person because this videotape auditions are, they're harder work, aren't they? Like, I don't know. It's
yeah, they're hard. I mean, it's like, it's I always like, I mean, it's cool because with cell tapes, you have a lot of time to do the scene, you know, so, but all, but then it means that the casting director is going to look at it more like you have to be more prepared than when you go in person. And also what I sometimes it's annoying is like you have a point of view that you know, the way that you think the character is or the scene is, you know, and then you do it. And it's like when you're in person, the casting director can be like, hey, that was good, but how about do it this way?
Right.
You can make the adjustment right there. With self-tape, it's very hard because if you didn't make that tone, they're not gonna call you back. You know.
Yeah, you're only getting one kick at the can. You get one shot, and if you get wrong, you're not getting any notes or anything in real time. You're not able to express that you've got some professionalism to you.
And
the other thing is just the, like I said, the effort of putting up all like I get that it's in the great scheme of things, it's not a big deal. But I'm like, I would rather drive into 45 minutes into a place to audition and drive back, then set up my lights and everything for an hour and a half.
But did you have one that you had to do a lot of stuff?
Like so that's what I was, so I was ranting to you about an hour and a half ago about having to do it and how exhausting I find it. And I ended up calling a friend and getting a friend to come down to save me setting up tripods and stuff like that. So I borrowed it for 20 minutes, but yes. And I got a call back. So I was complaining to you about an hour and a half ago and I just got an email saying that I got
a call back.
So all the bitching and complaining.
But it's still, I mean, I think it's, but yeah, I think it's that whole combo of like doing, I think it's also like that combo of like when you get the direction, it's like do as much as you can, but also don't kill yourself with like, oh, it has to be, you know, like if you have to do a garden or like you have to be by a lake or like things like, look, if you're, you can do it and it's not going to be a hustle, fine. But it's like, don't worry if you can't just like
I try to apply some of that thinking. Like, it's actually some of the thinking that I had from the Jim Jefferies show, from writing on the Jim Jefferies show. Because when you're churning out jokes and stuff, I started to learn, like, I'm churning out 3 pages of jokes here. And then I try to refine them. But then I realized, actually, my head writer, it's down to his interpretation of the jokes. And sometimes... Yes. Sometimes he'll like a shitty version of a joke I've written instead of the honed version that I think that I can see was better. So sometimes you got to allow for the eye of the beholder kind of a thing
and maybe
look at yourself and go, am I trying too hard?
Yes. And also that happens with tweets, you know, like sometimes like I write some tweet that I don't even think about. I just do it. And like, and it gets like a lot of likes and retweets, and then one that I go like, this is a perfect tweet. It's crafted perfectly. I'm like, nothing. That's kind of like.
Yeah,
so at the end, I think that it's like, it's that whole combo of like, in life, where I think that goes with everything of like, of like how much, like it's putting work and putting effort, but also don't like trust your gut and don't overthink too much, you know? And it's being in that middle because you can't just like do, like for example, with your audition,
you prepare
yourself, but also like don't over like, like I have an audition that I have to get ready to, like I'm preparing myself, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, when I do it, I'm like, just got to do it and have fun with it and chill. And like, it's not going to be perfect. It's nothing going to be perfect.
Yeah. Work smart. Don't overwork. Yes. Just try to work smart instead of overworking. Same as in material. You ever notice how when you write comedy material, you've got that initial stage where it's a baby joke and it sometimes gets great laughs and sometimes needs work. And then you got that middle phase where you've been doing it for a couple of months and it's just cooking and cooking. And then it all goes away about 6 months later. And you're like, why won't this joke work anymore? And you're like, oh, it's because I've honed it to death and I've trimmed down too much. And it just seems like too much of a fucking.
And I think, I think that's completely true. And I think that what you were saying is work smart and not overwork is what our next guest for episode 24 did, Al Jackson, which he like was they actually his nickname was Al Traveler Al. Sorry,
Traveler Al.
He travels so much, you know, just for, you know, when he was young, but also when he started doing stand up, he was traveling all over, and like, and then finally he was like, I wanna. He started working because now he works in the Daily Blast Live, which is a talk show that's very popular right now. And now he doesn't travel. He's in Denver right now. That's where they shoot it, which I didn't know. And now he did that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's found himself in Colorado. And he's one of the first people I met when I moved to L.A. The list, you know, the list is only a handful of people. You are one of them, Francisco and Al. I would say you guys came into my life when I first came to LA. And so it's an absolute pleasure to catch up to him and get him to join us on our podcast all the way.
So great because it's like, obviously he works in Daily Blast Live and he's like so good at talking, and also has so many stories to share. And also, like, obviously he's going to mention it too, but also check out his, He wrote a children's book.
Yeah.
Which is great that he's going to talk about it on.
We'll put the links down and I know we've been posting his comedy all week, but let's get to it. We had such a fun chat with him, so let's throw it to our little conversation with Al Jackson. Here we go.
Bye, hello.
We got him. Here is Al Jackson. We're joined. He's taking a break from his gambling, apparently.
Slot machines.
How are you, buddy? How's it going?
Dude, it's good to see y'all, man. It's just,
yeah, buddy.
You know, like I've had great times with both of you guys, but when I found out you guys were doing a podcast together, it's one of those weird things where you're like, you don't know who knows each other in comedy. And it's like, I almost feel like a friend where I'm like, how'd you guys meet? Like, are you guys like through comedy, or did you work on the show, or like, how'd y'all like get cool?
It was actually through our manager. We have the same manager, and he, when JJ moved to the US, he kind of like, hey, like, you want to meet JJ, you know? And then, which I always tell him this stuff. Like, I went to see him in a show. Like,
oh, really? Who's this JJ?
Because they, like, as we know, Al, like, when somebody says it's a comic or whatever, you know, you always want to be like, all right, let's see if you're a good comic. Like, are you a good comic? Yes. You know what I mean? So, like, I went to see him at a show, and then I was like, oh, okay, he's a good comic. And then I was like, all right, we can hang out.
It's an unspoken thing in comedy. We are snobs with other comics. And if you're cool with a lot of comics you respect, that says a lot more about your act than you think.
That's true.
More than hanging out in anything, it's more like, yo, I respect you. We can talk life.
Yes. So, and so I was telling him, he has nothing to do with that show that night. It was more about like, oh, okay, he knows. Even being like a good comic, you know, like, because you can be a great comic and not do good in a show, and I still be like, oh, that's a good comic. Like, I know he's doing. Like, he knows, you know.
I don't mind if a comic doesn't do well on the show, but you can tell if they're funny normally. If they don't do well on the show, though, and then they harp on about how they're usually amazing, or they chase audience out of the building and then blame it on them, then that's time
so
to
weird.
Run. You got to run.
Yeah. It's so weird how people don't see or hear like their act, and you're just like, you do know that, because I know when a show didn't go well. You know, and it's weird when other comics are like, well, how was that? Now it's on me to lie. Now you're making me. You bombed. Now I have to lie. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is. I don't understand. Like, it is funny because when I first moved to LA, you know, I started doing open mics, especially at the Comedy Store and stuff like that. And it was literally like half of the people were like me, were like, okay, sane, and kind of like wanted to do this as a career. And then there half of them were like literally like in a fantasy world. Like, they didn't see, like, you'll be like, are you not funny? Or like, or you keep doing the same stuff that's not working. Like, I was like, what's going on? But then I started saying, oh yeah, that's Hollywood. And you see a lot of people that live in fantasy land, and they're, you know, they get stuck, you know,
they're in a one person bubble.
Yeah.
But we had a couple of those in Britain as well. I you know, I've talked about it with some of my British friends and stuff. There are a few comics who are always like, I killed it, smashed it. And you're like, really? We were watching that gig. It wasn't I don't even think it got weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. And I think, you know, you're talking about LA. I started my career in Miami. And one of the big regrets, we all know Forshaw, he's a great, me and him have been cool.
He's one of all of our regrets. No.
One of our regrets is like, you know, we didn't record our open mics in Miami because at 43 years old, and I think Forrest is like 45, we were part of that last generation that has kind of one foot in the analog part of comedy history and then the post and the pre, the analog. Yes, it dates you. And that sucks. But the good thing is that our stories are crazier because now with the internet, even if a comedy condo sucks, like three or four comics will tweet about it. The club will get, they'll hear it about it and they'll fix it. We started our career at a time where just like, oh, the general manager is completely crazy. Oh, there's already another comic in the condo. Oh, you know, they forgot to tell us the club moved two doors over or so. I'm 40 minutes late getting on stage. Just like there were the crazy owners, crazy clubs, and crazy audience members. And I think it's because people acted a lot differently when no one knew that they were being recorded.
Yes. Yeah, that was so. That is so true because it's like, it's those stories that you never would have heard, you know, because obviously you had to be there. It's kind of like you had to be there kind of literally. Now it's like, you said somebody posted on Instagram or Twitter, you know, and then that's it. Everybody knows. Yeah. And, you know, you don't even have to post it on Twitter. You can share it as a group text. And that's still
I saw a comedian put this would be 2006. I saw a comedian put his penis in somebody's drink in the front row. I saw him undo his pants and just squat over the person's drink, getting heckled. And he went, what do you think of that? Right there. And then they were leaving. And I saw that can't happen now. And there's a few comics listening right now who know exactly the comedian I'm talking about because he's done it more than once. You couldn't do that now. And I was going to say, too, before this generation, like our generation.
That was called Pina Colada, by the way.
Yes.
Hey.
Before our generation, there was a vacuum because I think 80s comics, there was a lot of just insanity trading as comedy. So that was nurtured a lot more competition, I think, in our generation.
Absolutely. It's like, well, the walls of success are, I would almost say, laid flat. It's kind of basically as hard as you want to work. You want to have three podcasts, a YouTube channel, it's two TikToks, and get on stage three times a night. It's cool. Whereas I think in the 80s, there was probably less competition, but there was the Tonight Show or you can go F yourself. And so now it's like, you know, there's not like 200 people competing for one spot, but now it's 3 million people jockeying for everybody's 41 minutes of time, you know, and it's a lot harder to grab people's attention, but I kind of prefer it like this. I feel like just talking to comics and being funny and just kicking it is better than that. Like that, I never liked showcases. I didn't like those because they catered towards comics that were like 100-meter dash sprinters in the Olympics.
Yeah,
and some great comics are marathon runners, or they do the whatever the hell the four times around the track is, the 800. Right. You know, but it's like some people start slow. I mean, I know a ton of comics that would blow Ron White out of the water. For the first 3 minutes, you know, they got this crazy act and they blow the crowd away and they got two lines that they always hit the first two people in the front row with. And that gets a big laugh and they have a callback. But minute 17, where you at, bro? Where you at minute 28 when it's a little lull? Where the great ones take over, you know?
Put in their penis in a drink. That's
there you go.
They're staring that and shaking, but not stare.
Yeah, man.
That is true.
We had a guy in the UK who just used to go on about pigeons, and that was his whole thing. He never graduated from the open spot circuit, but when you saw him for the first 2 minutes, you're laughing your ass off because he's like, "What the fuck is up with pigeons?" And he's freaking out, and he's mimicking them, and he was walking around, and he's fucking fucking birds, fucking pigeons. And then about 2.5 minutes in, you start to look at each other. You go, this is it, right? This is all he does. He does pigeons for 10 minutes. And
yeah.
That's not going
to
last.
And then you think about how much he must think about pigeons to have a set about it. Because he's not only observed them for so long that they make him mad. But then he started thinking, I should do comedy. Then he thought about what that act would look like. And then he structured an act around pigeons, which made him think about pigeons 10 times more than he was already clearly obsessed. I mean, it's a rabbit hole of pigeons. It's a pigeon hole.
Yeah, it's a hell of a spiral.
Man. That's crazy. I just want to go because
we haven't introduced him yet, have we? Properly. Is that what we were about to do? We haven't done.
All right, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and in fact, we just started talking before we went live here as well. We didn't even get a chance to preamble with you because right away we all just started talking each other's faces off because we haven't seen each other for a while. But we didn't ask you if you had something you wanted to pitch or anything like that. I would like to just say I know you from touring with Jim Jefferies. And you're the co-host of the Daily Blast Live now. Al, since we didn't ask you before we went live, is there anything that you would like to pitch to our audience out there? Anything you'd like to let them know about?
I wrote a kid's book.
So oh, wow.
If you want to buy that. It's actually...
That's
really,
awesome.
Dude, you know what happened?
Is this during the pandemic that you did it?
This was right before the pandemic. It was done. And then it was completely, probably by the time the pandemic hit, I was on my second shipment. But I just had always wanted to write one. So I wrote one and, it started selling pretty good. It's called Where's Baby Ford? It's actually right here. This is a copy that's
right on.
It's next to me because, and it's a weirdly colored.
Where's Baby Ford?
Yes, Ford is my youngest son. And
cool.
It's not about Robert Ford.
No, it's weird. I should. That's going to be my second one. My youngest son is on the spectrum, and I wanted to write a children's book, so I started writing this book about my three kids going on an adventure. But then I had my son talking, and that now he's verbal, but he wasn't then. And it felt like, I think as a comic, it just felt fraudulent, to be writing dialogue. So then I just made it where he has an impact in every scene, but he doesn't speak because I wanted and 10% of all proceeds go to the Firefly Autism House here in Lakewood, Colorado. But
that's awesome, man.
That's
awesome. Dude, I've been doing their fundraiser. This would be my third year, but I really just got introduced to just like the world of autism. I know they don't. I worked with a kid on. Do you guys remember that old show MTV Made?
Did you? Yeah.
I was a coach on that. It was a while back.
Oh, wow.
I was a coach and the kid, which I don't think Asperger's is considered on the autism spectrum anymore, but he had whatever the hell that was, that sure looked and smelled like autism to me. And he had it. And it was like my first introduction. And the great thing about, again, television back then is like this, it wasn't like scripted reality. It was just me for 30 days trying to teach this kid that was on the spectrum how to do stand up and meet mm-hmm. girls. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it's so weird that I think about it all the time. And I look at my son and the kids I've met on the spectrum. It's this weird. It seems like initially to people that are heteronormative, not heteronormative, whatever the hell we are normal. I really want to say that we look at them and we're like, oh yeah, oh, you're on the spectrum. But I remember meeting Jordan, which is the kid I coached on MTV. And what I realized is that, first of all, a lot of comics are on the spectrum. After working with them, I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Just wasn't it that mid hadn't dropped, that term wasn't out, but I was like, oh, okay. And and like the laser focus and because there's like a lack of emotion that is emoted, they're not as nervous about interactions that they probably should be. Mm-hmm. So like, I remember the first night he was 15 years old, he was doing stand-up for the first time ever in his life on MTV at the Improv back in Louisville. And first time ever, think about it, just how nervous you were at your first open mic and nobody cared.
Yeah.
Just on national TV. Yeah. And I pulled him aside and I go, Jordan, don't look at the cameras. You got this. We worked on this. Don't be nervous. And he goes, nervous? I'm supremely confident.
Wow.
And like, it was such a, like, it like almost turned me on. It was so confident. It was just like, almost like, because they think of things so linearly, it's just like, we worked on the jokes. I worked on them after I left.
Yeah, it's like I practiced. I did. Yeah. Why would I be nervous?
Awesome. Where you'd be like, I'm going to go up there and trip. And what if the microphone's off and my mom would be lagging. Looking?
Yeah, if people following. Yeah.
So
it is a little bit of like, I don't know if, I mean, I'm not saying this, but I mean, I'm a very huge fan of Kobe. So, I mean, kind of like that Mamba mentality of like, like you put the work. So then when you do it, like, it's like, you know, he was very into like, you got to put the work, you know, the work and is the road, is the work, not the destination kind of thing. So I think it's a little bit of that. Like, it's like, why would you be nervous? Which is actually a very smart thing to say. I mean, that's why I always go like, when people are like in the spectrum or anything like that, I always feel like, I mean, who's the normal here? Maybe, I mean, I think they're smarter than me. I mean, that's just a smarter thing than me. Like, I would never think like that. And to me, that's more smart, you know? So it's like, I always go like, who is, you know, I think we're all
what's considered,
you know,
the same.
What's considered, you know? Yeah.
And you actually brought something up and I want to throw this at you guys. I'm interviewing y'all now. But you brought up Kobe and this is my opinion I'm saying on the podcast. This is not whatever. But I definitely think that Kawhi Leonard is somewhere on the spectrum.
Yes.
100%. For sure. 100%. And I wonder, I think Kobe was very socialized. And I don't know if he would be considered on the spectrum. But I think to have the kind of focus that he had every second of every day on basically one or two things and the obsession to be the best, I don't know if that would be considered on the spectrum, but I think about like, do you guys think anything that was like that we consider great? Like, how was Mozart not on this? Or like the person that's painted the Sistine Chapel, they were on their back painting with their left hand backwards for 16 hours a day. Like, what person, we would be up there like, my back hurts. I miss my girlfriend. You have to have this, like, you have to be on the spectrum to write a symphony.
Of course.
And you almost have to lean. You have to lean into it as well, in a way. In a way, sometimes you're tapping into those elements of yourself that are on the spectrum in order to bring out.
I think that obsession too that makes you like that. To me, that's, I mean, what's considered normal or not, but to have that obsession to be the best and to be like, you know, I'm like, forget my relationships and forget my life and forget whatever. I need to focus on this. I need to do this. You know, that's something, you know. Yeah, I think Kobe, I mean, I always remember that thing when I forget who it was, that their player, but the one that went like this to the ball and Kobe didn't flinch. That was the most
gangster thing I've ever seen in sports. Ever in my life. And you could tell the guy that he did that to, that was Matt Barnes,
yes,
who was a tough guy, a great player, and a real dude. And I think when that happened, Matt Barnes is like, oh, you're a real one.
When
a biker tells you you're free to go, like, I recognize game recognizes game. Like, that was like one of those things where like it was such a little thing, but to have trained your body to that point where like somebody flinches a ball in your face at an inch away and you don't move a millimeter is a different kind of focus that I just don't know if neurotypical people can get.
I think it's a little bit of what you were saying of the Jordan who was like, why, like, I think Kobe would say the same thing. It's like, why would I flinch? I know he's not gonna hit me, you know, kind of like that mentality of like, yeah, I don't need nothing, you know, like another normal person. Like, if somebody does like that, I'd be like, yeah, even though if I'm completely, you know. So it is crazy how, like, you know, how I always think that, like, how, which people are, when people say like, oh, this person is this, it's like, I think we're all have something, you know.
And I think everybody's got an element. I mean, that's what they say about athletes anyway, you know. It's you know, there's the talent element, and then there's the other things that you derive from your persona or whatever, you know, whatever type of autism you have going on in your body and stuff like that.
Just think, like, we could all, like, be better with a little autism.
Yes.
I have ADHD, and stand-up comedy for me helps me to focus. Stand-up comedy was amazing because with my ADHD, I'm just all over the place. Sometimes I got really bad days where I can't focus on anything. And then, but stand-up comedy for me was like, all right. It gave me that ability to put enough pressure on myself that I have to focus. I have to focus and get this right, or I'm going to let people down. I'm going to let me down. And that's the way I like it, because without that, I would rather just fucking, I can't, I'm less productive. I am an all, it's like an all or nothing thing.
Yeah.
You know, I need all that pressure, or I might as well just fart the day away.
Well, I think, I do want to go back and actually talk about Al and his travels.
Let's clarify the most important thing first. Like, he's actually not in a casino right now. So where
would No. Just so we know. Yeah, he's not. He's at his where are you right now, by the way?
I'm in Denver, Colorado. I've been here about 4 years now. Yeah, this is where we tape Daily Blast Live, my talk show at.
I always thought that was in LA.
No, yeah, dude, it's such a weird story, and I'm sure you guys have this with your career. Every single thing that I was sure was going to be a home run, like, well, I'm about to be filthy rich and famous, so I'll see you bitches later. You know, yeah. Like, that all, like, just flamed out, and I remember my agent came to me with this talk show in Denver, and I was like, in my head, I was like trying to figure out a nice way to tell my agent, like, I'm not the client you send to Denver, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Because
I had things going in LA, like everybody has things going. And I come back, Hannibal and I tour with Hannibal Buress too. He and I had just done, and we had just gone to Australia, and I came back and I had to wait because of the visa. I had to wait a day and then go on a USO tour to Japan and then came back. So I had been to Australia, LA, Japan, in the back, and flying back to LA, I was on the flight and I was like, I think this is the first time, like, I don't know what being burnt out from traveling is, but I felt like for the first time in 14 years I was. And I called my agent. I was like, yo, is that show in Denver still going? And they were like, yeah, they're still interested in you. So I took the gig thinking it's daytime talk. You know, there's no slots. You know, if it goes the season, it'll be a win. I'll sleep in my own bed for a month and then get back to LA. And here I am four years later. So it's always the stuff you're sure of that's going to fail. And it worked.
Completely. It's always like that. The stuff that you think, like you said, the stuff that you think it's going to make you, nothing happens. And the stuff that you're like, all right, let's see. And then that's the stuff that's like, yeah, because, I mean, I seen the show, and like, you're so good at it. I think, like, it's one of those things that also, like, I don't know if you ever thought you were going to be a talk show of a TV host, but like, you're so good at, because I seen your, you know, even stuff that goes viral sometimes that you're like, you know, your passion, but you're like so eloquent at talking about it. So it's like, it's kind of like you were made for that, you know, and you're really,
well, I mean,
like,
look at what we're doing right now. Like, you guys have a point of view, but you guys have figured out a way to make a living getting your point of view across to strangers by putting humor in it and surprise in there. And we sit and we talk on podcasts for hours and hours for years and years of our career. So you learn when to jump in, you learn when to back off, you learn when JJ needs space and let him talk, or like, hey, we need to. So all these elements we're like picking up. So I think that comics, and plus the radio, we do the radio to promote gigs where you have maybe 30 seconds to get, be funny and get something in there that you need. Hey, tickets at 7:30. Don't be late, you know, whatever. And so all these like weird skills, I feel like comics are just kind of like, on this like weird adventure video game. We don't know what the point of it is. And you're just picking up like, I'm funny and I'm kind of charming. And I kind of know what not to talk to people that live here or what they like to hear and don't do Walmarts and jokes in New York City. And you learn these like random facts. And then you like realize like, oh, there's a job as a talk show host or a podcast and all these things kind of come up, and I feel like technology in a weird way caught up with us, because I feel like this is what we've been doing since day one.
That's so true.
And now that you're doing Daily Blast, do you feel that has it chiseled off a bit of your stand-up career or time for stand-up? I mean, you must have less time to tour, obviously. So, like, how are you balancing that now? If you got the Daily Blast going, are you able to tour, or do you mostly just hit up the state of Colorado?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's a little bit of both. I don't tour as much, but I think it's because if I kept touring, guys, I was going to die. I was just like, I mean, I think that there's, especially when I started comedy, there I had this romanticized version of like what a road comic was, and like you're super like embarrassingly indignant about it. Like, I'm gonna die on stage. It's like, would you shut up?
Yeah. I'm gonna sleep on the train. I'm like, why? Go to a hotel.
Yeah, these melodramatic, tortured soul artists. After a while, you know, you're at the DoubleTree in Dallas for the 11th time, and you're like, we need to figure something out here, guys.
Yeah.
I completely. Can't do another lobby waffle. Yeah.
Completely. And you said you started in Florida, and then did you move like what was your like big move to for your career? Did you move from Florida?
I moved from Florida to New York right after I got my 30-minute special. And that was, again, almost pre-analog stand-up before everything was podcasts and things like that. And this was, like, at the time when I moved to New York in, like, 2007, where, you know, there wasn't, like, the idea of moving to New York, especially when I was a comic in Miami, as I was a middle school teacher and a comic, almost like having a day job and a night job, just like I have now. But it's like, now it's, I don't think that I like feel like anything's impossible, where I truly thought that like moving to New York was like, what are you talking about? Like there was no, you might as well have been talking to me about moving to Uzbekistan. There's no like, there's no connection. Like, how do you even do that?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh, really? Is that even within your comedy community that you were building in Florida? You still thought New York just doesn't seem like a logical.
Like I didn't know how to get there or how you made money. Like I at that Daniel Tosh had been gone from Florida before I got there. There was like a couple comics that were right ahead of me. That
he's
left.
A Florida boy too. There's a lot of boys.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of Florida boys. We had Orlando Labo. You got four. Man. It's just. Florida's comedy hotbed.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's hidden.
I guess it's because it's a hell of a state. You got to have a sense of humor to come out of there.
It's such a weird state. It's just like everybody kind of has these analogies for Florida, and I don't know how to figure it out. It's just like Florida is like it's like two different people. Like it's like your bipolar friend. One is like kind of like, you know, very country, yellow pickup truck, you know, get her done bumper sticker. And then the other one's very cosmopolitan Miami. And the two personalities don't ever really mix, but you as a comic float in and out. Cause like everybody's like, oh, you do stand up in Miami. Yeah. But you also do stand up in Tallahassee and Winter Haven and Ocala, you know, and like play, but yes, yeah. Florida gets a bad rap. Yes. Certain elements of Florida are terrible and embarrassing and scary, but there's this weird thing, especially when you're young, where like the only time that you can really have an incredible time is when things are a little scary.
Yeah.
And that's where Florida comes in. Florida does not judge you. They don't care what you're drinking and what time. You can get something anytime you want. And that's a good thing and a bad thing, but you can have the best time of your life in Florida and you can die immediately in Florida. And Florida doesn't care either way.
Right.
That's funny. It is true. Like when I've done shows, I remember, I remember I was doing a show in Orlando and then I had to do the next day, do a show in Daytona Beach. And like, I was like, even driving, I'm going like, well, there's a lot of NASCAR going on. Mm-hmm. You know, like the switch. It's like, you see, I was like, oh, and that's where I always go. Like, I was kind of like, chameleon in my way, so I don't get like that's when I stole my trucker hat and I'm I start going by Frank instead of Francisca because I was like, you never know, man. I don't want to get people but it is like what you were saying. I didn't really realize it until now. Yeah, like you go from in and out and you have to kind of like learn, and I think that really helps you then when you go into other road gigs or New York or anywhere else to like learn how to deal with different crowds. Because that's what you're doing, you know?
Dude, you hit it on the head. And JJ, I don't know how many times you've been to like Miami, like the South Florida part, but you know, between Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and West Palm, you know, those are like three very different demographics. Like West Palm is super high end, more conservative. Mm-hmm. And then Fort Lauderdale is like, you know, blue collar, still more conservative, but more of like a drinky, hey, let's go. Yeah. I know another bar that's open kind of place. And Miami is, you know, beautiful people, but 2/3 of the audience, English is their second language. So you learn how to be an entertainer, bro. You learn how to like, I mean, they still get the jokes, but like, you can't just stand there. So like make people laugh. And like, Miami taught me to be a to be a goddamn entertainer, dog. I was like, I need to learn how to make my Haitian people laugh. I'm gonna learn how to make my Cuban folks laugh. And teaching middle school, you know, my class was the United Nations, kids from Venezuela, people from all over the world. So like, I was comfortable floating in and out of just all these different people's worlds with different points of view. So Miami was such an international city, but I just felt like I didn't look at myself as like an observer. I felt like I was just one small piece of this incredible quilt. Jesus, nice analogy there, B. Arthur.
That's really interesting. I guess because I never thought of that before about how, you know, it's you're in this multicultural kind of place. But because I always thought of being the fish out of water, and that's where you can get your observations, because that's how I always felt. Like, I was a Canadian living in Britain doing stand-up comedy, and so that was helping me to make observations,
right?
You know, and I feel a bit of that way here in America, because I'm making observations about Americans now that Americans haven't noticed about themselves. But I never thought about the other way around, because of course in London, England, and in Edinburgh and Scotland, of course, huge collision of cultures from all around the world. So I'm learning all about their worlds, and also my roommates were Australian comedians, so I'm learning off the Aussies. You know, so that's a really interesting point that you know, you're gaining all these different cultural experiences from what you're surrounded by in a place like that.
It's a special place. And I'll tell you this, man, they don't really make comedy clubs that look like this anymore. The old Miami Improv was kind of weirdly situated. I don't know why they laid that out like that. Definitely, I'm sure whoever did it was on a mountain of cocaine. But the way the room was situated with these weird nooks and crannies and the super low ceiling, to this day, there's no feeling like when that room would be rocking on a Friday night.
Yeah. Orlando said the same thing. Orlando,
did he really?
Yeah, he said that club was so like good. He was saying like, and you know, I never got a chance to. I don't think I was doing comedy at that time, but he was saying that like the low ceilings, that room was just hot.
There was an energy, because people, it was like, that was a weird thing for me being a comic starting in Miami and living on Miami time. I mean, because there would be a 7:45 show and a 9:30 show. So the 7:45 show, I'm not trying to be funny here, the 7:45 show started like 8:40.
That's great in Miami.
And the 9:30 show would literally sometimes start at midnight. So I'd be like, we only had to do two shows today, and one got pushed till tomorrow. But like, the crowd didn't care, because they were kind of on Miami time, so they kind of showed up whenever. And it was like this weird party scene that can't be recreated. I know a lot of people wouldn't like it, but once you got used to it, it was just a way to be. And then when I started touring, and then you go to, you know, Cincinnati Funny Bone, and 7:45 and the music comes on, and you're like, what the hell are y'all doing? You starting at showtime. What fun is that?
Yeah. But it's so funny you mentioned that too, because now I remember I was opening for this Brazilian comic. His name is Rafinha Bastos, and we did the Miami Improv, but the new one that's in the Doral. And it's exactly now what you were saying. Like, it was like, because he had obviously a Brazilian crowd, so they didn't speak English, or they didn't knew that much English. And I had to go there. I remember like going there, and like, I was like, okay, I'm going to do my bits. And then like by minute five, I'm going like, oh no, I have to like just entertain. And then it just became a thing where like, you know, you work with the crowd, and then you slowly throw in your bits, and then you walk with the crowd. And now I was like, oh yeah, it was like that, because it was such a mixed crowd. I mean, I was like, it was like you're all over. So I was like, yeah, you have to kind of like, you can't stick to. And that's really helpful as a comic, because it makes you know how to work. Because it's easy when you perform in a crowd that's like, they know what they're doing, and it's like a very audience TV crowd. But that one is like, it's just complete wild, and you got to like take care of it, you know?
Yeah. Do you guys still do colleges?
I do. I still do. And like, I mean, right now, obviously, because of the pandemic, I did mostly virtual stuff. You know, I've done it, you know, it's funny, it's changed, you know, to me. Like, I think before it was like, you know, like, well, before it was, I think I changed, because before I was so, I took it very personal, you know. I was like,
oh, we lost you there, Francisco.
It's the quick time.
There you go.
Quick time. You know, I would, the first time I did it, I was like, oh, the first time, a couple of times, I was like, it's like, oh, people are coming to see me. And then you get there, and it's like, 10 people and like they're not even, they don't give a shit, they don't dare, you know. To me, I was like, oh my god,
have they taken the guts out of comedy a bit in America with
I feel like, I mean, to me, I was like, you have to let it on, because with all this thing, it's like, oh, they're sensitive. It's like, yeah, but they're still also like kids and like young kids and like young. So it's like, yeah, don't talk about stuff that they will feel weird about. And I think that, to me, that's what my approach has always been, to be like, you know, you just talk about stuff that they can relate to, and like in a way, and if they can't relate to, you gotta explain to them in a cool way, in a cool, entertaining way, you know. But but yeah, now I'm like, I realize it's not personal, like, and I just go and do it, you know, and it's kind of like, all right, let me go and get in there, do my thing, and bye, you know. But before, I was like, I took it very personally, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it's super weird because in Britain, I'm pretty sure the stand-up comedy at colleges culture hasn't changed much in Britain, but it's a great deal of rebellion. It's a big drunken night, and everybody's kind of out of their sorts for the students, the young people love it. And I think when you come to America and you see what a college gig is, it's very different. I guess, you know what, a college gig in Britain is more like Frosh Night, you know, it's more like drunken mayhem and craziness, and there's a comic on, woo! Whereas in America, you have Frosh Nights, and then you have, when the comedian comes, it's, you know, it's a bit of a safety zone or something.
JJ, that what you just described is the way comedy is in Britain at colleges. That's what I thought it was going to be. Because, you know, right. You get booked to do Florida State, and you're like, all right, girls on shoulders, beer cakes, and you get there, and it's in the student lounge on a Friday at 8:30. There are people getting chicken nuggets. There's some people playing cards. There's,
and you're read a riot act. You're told not to touch certain subjects and all that kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, it's very different from British.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're
British college gigs. Yeah.
Well, it's also the preparation. They're not even, they don't even know that much about stand up. So it's like, I mean, I've done shows where like they were like, hey, we're giving away free coffee. So the show was like in their Starbucks thing. So, like, wow. You know, people are lining up, not to see me, but to get the free coffee. And then while I'm doing the show, all you hear is like, shh, shh, you know, all the booming and the stuff. I was like, and I'm literally talking to one person that's paying attention to me.
Yeah.
And they're paying attention to me because they're part of the student council that hired me. So they have to pay attention.
And you know, they lost the bet to stay there. Everybody else is with their boyfriend and they're like, I'll sit here and watch this. And they're like sitting there. I just remember like doing colleges. I remember Forrest and I did a college in Long Island, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. There was nobody there. Like it was in the cafeteria at like 4 o'clock. Like I think the cafeteria is probably pretty empty by two. Mm-hmm. And so this was 4 and it was like, it was a Friday. And I think like somebody like Kanye West or some like a big act was there or going to be there in like 2 hours. And there was just a lunch attendant just wiping down trays. And we had to stand there and do stand up to a completely section of empty chairs. And it just showed me how much money
colleges don't care,
just
right?
waste. Yeah. It's like, you should have flushed it down the toilet or given it to a homeless guy and filmed him for an hour and see what he does with $5,000.
Yeah.
What a waste of money. It's so, and I'll take it. But just like,
I'll take it.
There's no structure. You know, the person that hired you doesn't know who you are. So you get there, you're like, hey, I'm JJ. I'm doing the stand up. She's like, stand up. Do we have?
In a lot of cases, if they don't spend it, they lose it, don't they? So
yes.
They have to spend it. So that's why instead of it being prioritized, sometimes you can only find that out once you show up at the gig.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm one of those. I'm that act. That act of like, oh, we had $2,000 left in the budget, so let's get one of those. Otherwise, we don't get the $2,000 next semester.
And then you see a poster of a comic that you know that they are promoting, and you're like, oh, they're one of those.
I mean, I'm not in that tier. Oh, got it. Yeah. Got it.
Definitely. You'll be in the library, the learning annex, Francisco. There's an accordion door, but you can shut it for a little intimacy.
There's no mic. You can use the mic from the podium, but you can't take it out. Oh, yeah. All right, cool. So I'm teaching a class. Okay, thanks.
All right. Well, okay. So I'm dying to know, like, here we are, because we're like 38 minutes into our podcast. We actually haven't asked you any of the, we like to talk about travel. Actually, we touched on it a bit, but
I love it.
I'm dying. I'll try to get us back on track, but I'm just curious, when you found New York to be the daunting thing, did you do the move on your own? I mean, you said it was off the back of your special. So did that give you the balls to go, at least I think I can have a footprint in New York at this point? Or did you do it with friends? Did you make the move with a friend?
No, I did it by myself. And again, I just think part of my career and part of any success that I've gotten is because I was too dumb not to know to not do that. So I just moved. Right. And luckily for me, I was the house MC at the South Florida Improvs. So I knew almost every comic that lived in New York. And I had worked with them and hung out with them and partied with them. So I knew them as friends, not like, hey, I'm the guy. Right. Like, I'm like, hey, remember Saturday? You know, so I knew these guys and women. So I had a lot of connections when I got there. I kind of done a mini tour with Attell when he was at the height of his fame with Insomniac. So he kind of helped me get in and get my feet, you know, however you say that, in New York. And so, like, it really worked out well for me. And, like, when I got there, it just felt more.
That's a great way.
Oh,
I think we lost.
Yeah, I've lost him. We've lost him.
We lost the audio. Oh, now we can hear.
Yeah. Okay. It's
Yeah.
Now there you go. Now you're gonna start over again. Now you're gonna start.
No. I'm gonna put the mic here, and then I'm not gonna. Dude,
or maybe that's a thing that you did it, or that you didn't want to say, and you were like, you did that trick. Yeah. That's a daily blast trick. They're like, I'm not gonna get in trouble with this. I'm just gonna pretend. And I'm like, what are you talking? I'm sorry.
It's like right before you say, I'm not saying women shouldn't get paid as much as men, and then your phone dies and it saves your career, and you're like, oh, thank God.
Oh, did I need that? Thank you, comedy god.
I was just saying with New York, I knew a lot of people, and I think New York is a great example of just probably anything in your life, whether you do stand up or not, or you just want to travel.
Yeah,
because and I could say this. I know we talk about traveling. You guys talk about traveling on this podcast. Before I got into stand up, my friends used to call me Traveling Al, because I just used to book flights and go places super broke, pre-pictures, Instagram. Me and my boy Quay, who's a doctor now, we went to Spain. When I landed, I probably had $200 in my pocket for a couple weeks. Like, and I just got there, and I hustled, and I figured out how to meet people, and I traveled all through Costa Rica, and not like finding myself after college. I was just a crazy person that loved to see the world.
That's not crazy. I think that's a thing that, like, that should be, that more people should do, especially when you're young and getting in college or getting out of college, because that's, I mean, I'm assuming you learn so much about yourself and also about the world as well, you know, like just being, you know, in Spain and Costa Rica and all these other places, because I think that's what traveling does. It really makes you, like, especially when you're by yourself, you know, you don't have like your parents telling you to do this or anything. Like, you're like, oh, well, I gotta, you know, it's that survival mode that kicks in, you know?
Yeah. And it makes you go out and seek people. And so, like, you know, I wouldn't be looking to meet people, but I would be out. I would leave my room. I wouldn't sit in my room and, like, get hungover and sleep until one. I'd go walk around and go see what was free and go see what I could afford to see. And because of that, you run into people, some dude sitting at a cafe. Yeah, you got a weird accent. Where are you from? You know, and now you're talking to this dude, and him and his wife take you to their place, and you go with them and have lunch at some guy's house in Germany.
Nice.
And it's just like,
I thought you were going to say something else.
Yeah. You wake up. I thought you were like, you wake up.
I thought you were going, I was like, oh, okay. Wow. All right. Nice. What kind of trip was that? Was that in Costa Rica?
Man, I went all over, all through Mexico, all through Central America, through Europe. When I started comedy, I had already been a lot of places, and then that just kind of cemented it, because then comedy kind of like lets you pay for the trip, if nothing else. And so, like, you can really start to travel and just see some cool stuff and stick around maybe an extra week.
Yeah.
But you need to do it when you're young, bro, because I tell you, man, I'm 43 And I think you always think like, well, I'll do it after college when I have more money. But then you get your entry level job.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, I need to take half Friday off. And they're like, no. So yeah. You're definitely not going overseas for 2 weeks.
So
you need to go when you don't think you can go. Because once you're out of college, it's harder. You have pressure to compete.
Yeah.
You might be dating somebody who might not be feeling you, blowing your house savings.
Yeah,
you
work
know.
Ambitions and
yeah. So go when you're young.
I agree with that completely. I think it's like you, especially also because you have the energy to do it as well. I mean, like at my age right now, I'd be like, no, I'm not gonna. I can't. I mean, even if I wanted to, I couldn't. But yeah. I wanted to ask,
I often wonder if we're spoiled in that we kind of combine our holidays with gigs sometimes. We're like, oh, I'll do that, and I'll also call it a mini vacation.
Yeah.
Because I like going.
But I wanted to ask Al, because you travel so much all over the world, is there anything that you picked up in your travels that would be great to bring back, or that you would be like, I wish like here in the
Americans,
U.S. people would do it. Yeah. Americans would do it, you know, or something like that.
Yeah. Dude, like a
custom
bunch.
Or food or whatever, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, there's a lot. I would say one thing that I really did like was it sounds weird, but I liked not tipping, just having the tip built in.
Because I love that.
It was so great, and it's not a cheap thing. I mean, I like knowing that whether I'm there or not, that my server isn't dependent on, and I've waited tables. You're not dependent on just like how somebody's feeling that day, or like JJ, I didn't like his accent, and I couldn't understand when he was telling me Caesar salad, so kind of ruined my night. I don't want that to. So I just loved how the service industry was run, and I actually really like, because I'm sober now, but like the way that they drink in Scotland is like maybe showed me that I was an alcoholic, because I hate all the little games with drinking. I don't want to play drinking games. I don't want to go to a bar where like a bartender has on effing suspenders and he's cutting a fig. I like to go to bars where the lights are up. There's no TVs. There's no agendas for what we're doing there. And people are pounding, not even like fighting or yelling, just like people that just enjoy drinking. And I loved it over there. So I did like pub culture over there as well. Right. Yeah. Dig it.
And can I point out something on top of the tips being baked in? Like, so, and in Britain, for example, you buy people drinks, you buy your server a drink instead of tipping often. So you go, you know, we'll have three drinks for us and one for yourself kind of thing. And that's kind of how they pay it forward in Britain. But also, speaking of having things baked in, they do it with their taxes and stuff as well, which I think is great. When you go into a shop and you have a bottle of Jameson's there and the bottle is £20 and that's it. It's not $19.99 plus whatever taxes you get hit with at the till or anything like that. You just know, and it's all baked in. I'm a big fan of that too, Al, man, on those levels.
And also, I'll just say, like, especially going through Central America, just the warmth of the people and how that would translate into their entertainment spaces, where I'm sure if you saw where we would be listening to music or drinking and dancing later, you'd be like, this looks like a scary Stonehenge. But when you get there and you feel, they turn the lights on, there's nothing fancy. There's no door guy with like, you know, a black suit on and a clipboard. Like, oh, you're not good looking enough to be in here. Bring the hotties up front and the regular people just want to have fun. It was like such a communal, like you could tell even that they looked a little shabby. Everybody had the best stuff on that they could afford. And it was just everybody in there kicking it in this very non-pretentious way. And it was fun and it felt free. And like sometimes like I think that's why I never like strip clubs. You can always feel the bouncer looking for a reason to kick your ass.
Yeah.
You know, like there's like a credit card machine and it just seemed like I like to be, you know, in some remote island on the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, and like literally the only thing that's cold is being kept cold by ice cubes. There's really no electricity. They're playing a CD.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it's this free, it was this freedom and this non-pretentious fun, like, oh, dude, you're wearing last year's shirt in here. Like people wouldn't know what you were even talking about. Just people dancing and having a good time. And I kind of always like that.
Yeah. There's no hidden agenda. It's kind of like, it is what it is. And it's like, people are there just to have fun, to relax. And yeah, that's a great, I mean, when you go into, I mean, anything, anywhere, like in any time when you travel and you get to those points, I mean, it's because it is hard to find those places. I mean, I guess when you're as a comic, when you're on the road, I mean, like, because especially in the US, you go to big cities and stuff like that. I mean, it's hard to find those chill places. I mean, I don't know if you know any, but like, yeah, to find those places where it's just very like chill and, you know, let's just drink.
It's hard. Why do you, JD, how's like, because everybody's like, you know, at around our age or maybe even 10 years ago for me, oh, go to a lounge. But I'm like, isn't this just a club we're sitting down at? This drink is still $14. Like, well,
I can still hear or see people.
Yeah. I kind of like still want to dance. I just don't want to ruin young people's night. You know?
Yeah, I don't want to.
I'm still a fan of the house party. I like the house party the most.
House
party after the club night. And especially if people who are at the show are at the house party, then you're really crushing it.
Yes.
If not, you lose all your powers. If you just go to a nightclub after a comedy show, it's like kryptonite, and you're just another dude in the nightclub.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it's also at this age too. It's like, I mean, like going to like a club with so young people. Like, first of all, I remember like I would wait for hours just to get in there, you know. And I'm like, I'm not doing that anymore. Like, I'm not gonna wait an hour. I'm like, either I can't come in, and if it's crazy packed and I can't move, I'm also leaving. I'm like, no, I want to, you know, I'll dance and stuff like that, but I want to be like, hey, what kind of, you know, I'm like,
So
I mean, I'm trying, I guess we got to set up a club like that for just more adult. It's only 20 people allowed and you're chilling.
Speaking of which, it's like that actually leads us into something that I'm dead curious. There's a couple of things that we love asking our guests, and because we've just been rambling, we haven't been able to get that yet. But I'm assuming that dance clubs aren't your number one form of recreation. But we're wondering, like, when you're on the road, what kind of stuff do you seek out, like, to do to kill the day? Or do you just go to the dance clubs at night and exhaust yourself so that?
Well, it's just like, dude, getting sober, it's almost like a tale of two cities, bro. Because I was just
right.
I loved the nightlife, so I would get up around 1 o'clock and watch the games. But like, really, my day started at like 6, you know, and I would go do the shows, and then I would love to go. Either to a cool place at the suggestion of like the staff, or like a place I had been to before that kind of had music and like fun. And like, you know, after a while, after you've been to a city a couple times, you're like, oh, we're all going to go to JJ's at 1:30 last call anyway. So the night goes till 4 o'clock. And now, like, now I eat my way through a city. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be like, yo, this place got a dope breakfast. And I'll get a car and I'll drive around the city. And I'll just eat and drink coffee all day and then get ready for the show. So it's like, I think I take in more of the city now than I did, but I take in less of the nightlife. But it's like, I'm not like one of those people that stop drinking. I'm like, I am so pro drinking and going out. I just feel like no different than you won't find me on a playground because I'm too old.
You grew up. Yes.
I not even grew up because I don't want to disrespect like that. I'm just saying, like, I had my fun.
Yes.
And now I'm giving up my bar stool for a young 22-year-old Al to take it. Like some kind of weird.
So you're handing the baton, like the actual, but it's like a
And then I hand him a Jameson and then I just vaporize. And he's
and
like,
you
who
go
is that
like,
guy?
And you're like, go get him, Tiger. He's like, who was that? Yeah. There was nobody here. Are you drunk? that was the ghost of Al.
Yeah.
Like, he used to drink here back when he was young.
Yeah, no, they're like, no, he's still here. He's in the bathroom. But dude, I think like there are people that like retire from pro sports and some people get injured and they're crying at their retirement because they still want to play. And some people are like, yo, I'm gonna go spend time with my family. I got a boat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And like, dude, I have fun. And like now, like, if you guys like, we're going to the bar, I'm like, when? Let's go. Yeah. You know, and I still go and have a good time. I just like,
but it's a different, I completely agree with what you're saying because I did the same thing. Like I went out a lot when I was like in college. I used to promote parties in DC,
oh,
you know, like literally like every every weekend, like, you know, like I would go out and like until 4 a.m. wake up and do like soccer and then play and tennis and then party again until 4, you know. So like, but I did all that. So like now I'm happy. Like I already did that. I can't, I don't want to do that anymore. And it's kind of the same thing. It's like, also I don't have the energy to do it, but also I'm happy that I did that. And I, that's why if I have kids, when I have kids and stuff like that, I'd be like, when you're young, you do all that, go crazy, do all this stuff, travel, get, because when you don't want to do, it's like, it's progression of your life. You know,
because you see the people that didn't do it.
Yes. And I would see the people at the clubs and be like this, like 50 year old man. I'm like, go, what are you doing? Go watch MacGyver.
Yeah,
like this is not, you're not supposed to be here, man.
It's a rough go, and you see like the young 22 year old girls dancing around him, and he's dancing with them, and he doesn't know that they're being ironic and kind of shitty to him. These hot chicks, and they're like, oh, take a picture with me with my dad, you know. I don't want to be that, I don't want to be that dude. So it's I don't. JJ, do you still go out?
I felt like that dude recently. Well, not recently. Obviously not recently, not in the pandemic, but yeah, I did a gig. I'm trying to remember where it was. I did a gig and I wound up going out with all the staff and the other comics, and I was definitely the oldest person in this club, and I didn't want to be there, and I'm on the other end of town, and I didn't really know where we were going or anything, and I should have just got out, but I kept thinking, though, surely it's 1 a.m. now. Surely we'll all be leaving. See, I've turned into the old man while everybody else is partying. I mean, I am drinking and everything. I'm like, all right, we're about 10 miles. We're 10 miles from the hotel, aren't we? How do we get home? Are we ready to go?
And it's funny different because it's like, let's say we're on the road, all three of us. And like right now, I'm like, hey, let's, after a game, we go like, let's go out and have a drink or whatever. Like, I'm okay going with you guys because we know we're on the same plan.
Right.
We're going to have a couple of drinks, going to be chill, eat good, you know, like. But it's not gonna, like, I know I'm not gonna end up until 4 a.m. to be like, hey, or like, you know, like, it's like, no, we gotta wake up tomorrow. We got another show. Like, you know, it's like,
I like to drink and I have trouble stopping. So it's tough. So I do enjoy nighttime, but sometimes I forget that I'm not 25 anymore.
Yeah. What started to get me, JJ, is like, you were talking about just now, like, knowing for sure that you're the oldest person there. But then you're like, I keep myself up pretty good. And, you know, on TV, I must look okay. I'm like a good looking guy. And then the bartender calls you sir. And you're like, oh, no. Yeah. You know.
Well, that's where you also need the ghost of Al to come.
Yeah.
You'll be like, hey, JJ, go home. It's over. Your time has come. Come and join me. And that's where, like, kind of like Field of Dreams, where like you go both disappear to the bathroom. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. and JJ comes out wide awake. It's like, it's either that or just like I take JJ in like Field of Dreams and like we walk through some cornfields and then he just opens up in an old people bar and I'm like, this is where you live now. And then he's sitting next to a guy reading the newspaper and the horse race is on mute in the corner. It's like, this is where we live.
And I turn to Al and I'm like, but 25 year old women can still find a ballot and we have something to offer.
And then Al goes,
No, we don't. And they don't see that, Jay.
No, Al goes like, it's true, JJ. They're called nurses. And the nurse comes and it gives you an oatmeal plate. And you go like, if you build it, it will come. The oatmeal will come.
But
that's how it is. I wanted to ask quickly too before we're done with it because we're almost done.
When you're traveling,
you know, with all, because you travel, you know, from when you were by your, you know, young, you know, for work,
years,
you know, like you're the traveler Al. Did you have anything sentimental or superstitious that you would bring or that you still bring with you,
Is it okay if I guess? I like it when we guess.
Oh, yeah. JJ always likes to guess. But
I would like to guess that we're dealing with a non-superstitious man.
I'm actually the opposite. I think he's superstitious. I think he brings maybe Something that's super, or I mean, because wait, so superstitious or sentimental? You're saying JJ, or you're that he's not superstitious?
I think either if you're traveling with it, and even if you call it sentimental, but you travel with it and stuff, that's a superstition.
Okay, I think he does. I think Al does have something.
Okay, you guys are both kind of right. But instead of taking something with me to the gig, I would always take something from the gig, and so it would technically always be with me. I would always take a hotel pen and the notepad. But every hotel I have a pen and the pad, and I would write jokes down or write down like people's numbers, you know, whatever. I always, so like at the end of my career, I think I still have them stashed around somewhere, but I have the hotel pen and pad from everywhere.
That's cool.
So I would even I would go back up to the room if I left it and get that. But that was, I know some guys take room keys, but that would be the thing I would take. Not so much with the superstitious stuff. I think I tried to take a $2 bill, but I was broke a lot, so I'm sure I spent it. Like, I was like, I need a sandwich from the gas station.
That's cool. I mean, it's funny because I do use the every time in a different hotel I use for a gig, I do use the notepad to write my set. Me too. So I always use that notepad specifically, you know. So I always find like in my book bag, like different sets, like of different hotels.
It's amazing how a lot of the hotels have the notepads that fit better in your pockets as well. So when you run through your set, you know, you run through your set and you're able to get this thing in your back pocket a lot easier. So
I was going to ask you guys, how are you guys feeling about hotels as we come out of the pandemic? In that, we now know officially that human beings are gross. Yeah. You know, if you think about the fact that, like, we all threw masks on, forget Corona, but we all wore masks, and, like, you go places and you actively see them, you know, disinfecting stuff. People, I don't see as many people with you know, sniffling, regular colds. People aren't getting, you know, you have a friend that gets the flu twice a year. Yeah. I just feel healthier. I'm not, I never have, like, oh, my stomach kind of feels weird. I think I ate some more late. And like, I wonder now, post pandemic, am I either going to go out less because I know the further and further we get away from Corona, knock on wood, the more lax things are going to get. And next thing you know, you're going to see, you ever seen like the bartender clean the rag and they pull the rag out?
Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell is that smell? And it's the rag they're cleaning with because it's just moldy, you know? And so I'm like, once we get back there, like, I don't know if I want to be out as much because now I know how gross everything is.
Yeah. I actually just went this last weekend to Palm Springs and I stayed at the Fantasy Springs Casino. And like, actually, and also when I did DC, I also stayed in a hotel. One thing that the hotels are doing now is like, they're not doing room service anymore. So when you stay there, like, you know, they're not coming. So I actually like that because sometimes it's like, you know, like, I don't want somebody to come in my room and everything. So like, but I didn't feel like I didn't feel like disgusted, but I do, there's things that like, I'm still going to be using. Like, for example, I'm going to still be using the mask when I travel. Like that's 100% all the time. Like
forever,
you know, stuff like that. So I'm going to be using, you know, now I'm very considerate of washing my hands of people. If I see, you know, so like, those things. So I think, I mean, for me, it's not because even though like I'm always like very like not like I'm always not trying to get sick and stuff like that. But now I think I learned to be a little more in stuff that I can control. I mean, obviously, if I see somebody touching like a sandwich with their hands or whatever and like and I see it, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to have that. I'm sorry. Like, give me another one or whatever. You know, like I'm going to.
Yeah.
But I think overall, I think they're just learning those things that I think are going to be. You know, for me, I felt safer in a way. Like, and I didn't feel like, ew, there's, I mean, yeah, people are disgusting anyways. But I think if you can control your own sense of, you know, I think that's enough. I think that would really, because literally we touch everything and then you grab a chip and you put it in your mouth without washing your hands, like really well. And that's why you get sick, you know. So most of the times it's stuff like that, so.
But even over the course of Corona, I did the whole happy birthday twice thing, maybe last January and February. but now I'm back to just a couple.
Oh, no, I still watch 20 seconds.
I'm good.
No, I still watch 20
seconds.
Well,
good for you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You know what I thought about it? I know we got to go, but like in terms of just like bar culture, like it used to be a thing that I think it was like universally agreed upon that like a drunken bar makeout session was fine. And now that's going to seem so transgressive, like to open mouth kiss a stranger after it's been so long. And you've been conditioned probably every 10 minutes for the last year and a half that something kind of coming out of somebody's mouth could kill you. And now you're making a direct connection. It's so interesting because, like, the drunken makeout, like, I feel like
you'll have to do it outside next to the smoking section.
JJ, it's a commitment between you and her now because now she can call you in 2 weeks and be like, I thought we had something. I kissed you with my tongue.
We had COVID.
Yeah,
we do.
Well, I think we're starting from scratch because I think before the pandemic started, I think we went all the way where, like, people now were like eating ass like it was a buffet. And I think finally it got to the point where like the world was like, all right, enough. You we're going to have to give you a pandemic because you can't just be eating ass every time. So now we're going back to like shaking, still doing this, you know. We're like a full circle. But yeah.
Just said sharing blunts is not going to happen anymore. No,
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that's true because I actually I brought some for Palm Springs. I even brought to my cousin because I was going to meet him, and I was like, I brought another one. I was like, this is for him, you know.
Because
even he's my cousin. I was like, and he's vaccinated and everything. But then I was like, okay, but still, I was like, you know, never.
That's very considerate, but I would still do the, and I would do the sober as well. I would do the grab the blunt, but. You know, make sure that it doesn't go on your lips. You know, person, smoke it. You still gonna smoke it, right? You can't.
You still get most of it. You get the point. You get the point of the blunt. Yeah, it's that's gonna be the thing. It's just everybody kind of like still acting like they're this wild man, but they'll like take the shot, but like cup the rim of it so just their fingers hit it. You know, it's gonna be like we cannot. You know, what my girl said, I thought it was really interesting. She was like, nobody can act like we all haven't been traumatized in some way. It has affected you. It will affect you. It'll affect, like you said, even the weird knuckle bump. Oh, elbow. Oh, you want a handshake? And then, like, you also have to remember, because I did a gig last Thursday at a gig that was probably 20 miles outside of Denver. And, bro, the booker told me, I mean, I've been double vaccinated for about a month now. Dude, the booker told me, he was like, as we were walking in, he was like, take your mask off. It will not work out well. Like, there's a lot of people that are very JJ, I'm talking about, like, I have a friend of mine who's a comic named Colin Bohanna. He's a comic down in Florida. And he also drives for Uber Eats in Florida. I guess a lot of places are very, very anti-mask. Yeah. And he said he went to go pick up somebody's food from a bar. Just, it wasn't his food. He just, like, walked in the bar and stood up at the service station. He said he had been in there, like, 6 seconds. And some dude turned and goes, take that mask off in here, pussy. Like within, and he's like, he didn't know the guy. He didn't say anything. He was just standing there waiting for food. And this was 4 months ago, like pre everybody being vaccinated. So I think there are going to be also places where you think you're.
Why care? Why be that motivated?
It's political, man.
It's political. It's completely
ideological.
Yeah. But I also, that's one of the reasons I wait until I was vaccinated and that's when I was done. I told my agent and manager, I'm like, all right, now you can start booking me on road gigs, because I knew, especially back, Florida and Texas and all those places are the ones who are more open for shows. And I was like, yeah, even though I'm going to wear the mask, I know I'm not exactly. I had the same feeling of like, yeah, I over there, I can't wear the mask because they're going to be like, what are you doing? So I'm like, but at least if I'm vaccinated, I feel, well, I am going to Colorado in a couple of weeks, Colorado Springs.
Dude, how long am I when you're here?
Yeah, I'm there at the Threes Club, is it called? Threes Club?
Yeah, in Colorado, that's going to be fun. Springs.
Yeah, so I'm awesome. I'm obviously not going to be wearing the mask when I'm there.
Call me bro. Guys, you got to call me at 2 a.m. from the nightclub, okay?
Yeah,
that's right. No, we're probably going to be eating dinner at a lounge, listening to Easy 101.
Now just some tapas and, I'll have a mocktail. You'll have a $12 cocktail that's really just a little bit of gin and fruit juice. But yeah, man, like, wow, I'm here for it.
Night. Yeah, awesome. Yeah. No, that's great. I didn't know you were in Denver, so that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, man, I love it here, bro. Y'all come through. So show some love.
Yeah.
That'll be great. Al, on the way out the door, we have one final question that we ask all of our guests. It's really straightforward. We're just wondering if you have a favorite piece of travel advice that you like to pass down to people.
Oh, that's really great. Yeah, I'll say this. For like a casual weekend traveler, but somebody that probably gets out every 6 weeks, get a good bag. Get a really good travel bag. Right. Spend more money than you ever thought you would. I drunkenly bought a Shinola kind of leather chocolate bag. It was super expensive. I was still married at the time, and it started a huge fight. Like, how could you spend that much money? And you know what? I was looking at it this weekend. It still looks exactly the same.
Wow.
It still has that leather smell. You can take it back and get it refurbished or whatever for free. Wow. It's a bag that I'll probably have forever.
What is it?
And you love that bag. You love that bag more than you could have ever loved her.
What is it, a carry-on bag, or is it like
Okay, I'm going to get up slowly because if I get up too fast, it's going to make my camera freeze, but I'll show it to you. Really. Right. Wait, Brian might already pulled it up.
No.
I'll show it to you. This is my trusty travel bag, and you can get your initials on it.
Awesome. Yeah, because I like getting good bags. I spend money on a way bag. Have you had that? Away suitcase, because it's kind of like the what's this more expensive one? I forget Tammy Toomey.
Oh yeah, Toomey's. Yeah.
But Away bags. I don't know if you have Away bags are really good, and they're like, you know, they're kind of expensive, but they're really good.
It's just it's one of these bags. Oh, nice. And you can get your let me see if you can see the initials up here. Yeah, but like you can get your initials on it. Like right there at the top.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like I can still smell the leather on it. And you know what it is, Francisco? It's a great conversation starter. When people, if you're traveling and you don't know people, just like if you have a nice bag or something, it's not flashy, but just like something to kind of make you stand out. And like when you go to hotels, you have a nicer bag, easier to get
they
an upgrade.
Treat you better.
Guy's going to spend a little bit more money. It's little things like that. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but like,
That's why I travel with leather pants.
I'm with you. So I'm with you on the bag love. I've got a Kathmandu. I got this Kathmandu in Australia in 2003, and it's still a killer. It's one of the first ones I ever saw with a laptop pouch in the back, and it's got layers. It's fully layered, and it's got all these pockets. It's like it crushes. I'm like, oh man. You find a good bag.
The bag is so important. And
that is important.
And also security line tips. I know a lot of people think that like, oh, you go into the line with like some young people because they're not going to be slow like old people or people with babies. There's a secret to that. And the people with babies and older people that are in wheelchairs, they get to go through not the security that makes it look like you're going into the future. We have to put your hands up. Just that they have at like bad middle schools, just that kind of square one. And they push them through. So they actually go through security faster than you would think. And people our age, we have, you know, an iPad, a laptop, you got to take your watch off, you got shoes with it.
Yeah.
And like, so, and older people don't have to do any of that. And young kids don't have to do any of that. So they may look like they're going to take a long time, but they get to go through the easy one that only goes off if you have like an AK-47. So that's the thing. Find old people and babies and take advantage of them. That's how I teach my kids.
That's awesome. Man. Those are great tips. And that was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I know we could go and talk so for hours and hours. I mean, like, because you had so much knowledge and stories.
Dude, let's do it again.
We'd love to do it again because I think we didn't even finish like, half of the questions we had.
Yeah. So. And like I was saying, before we even started, because we were going and going and going, and then we had to, our producer had to be like, you guys should maybe start the podcast soon. And like, we're just talking because. Yeah, there was stuff we were talking about before that, and I went, let's talk about it on the podcast. And we didn't even come back to it. So it was such a pleasure, and yeah, cracking guest, man. Thanks for rambling on.
And remember to watch him in Daily
Blast Live.
And also get his children's book. Where is Ford? Right?
Where is Baby Ford?
Where is Baby Ford?
And it's on my website, Al Jackson Live.
Yeah, and we'll have a link for it. I'm sure there'll be a link underneath.
Brian is on top of everything.
Right now. And
Brian.
I need him in my life, like in a weird, you know, Yeah. Domestic partnership. I got a girl, but like, hey, so we're.
And Brian loves to smoke too. So
yeah,
he's a big Denver guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, but well, thank you for coming, because we appreciate it. I know you're crazy busy, so we appreciate you giving us our time. Yeah, man.
Hey, gentlemen, I appreciate y'all, man. Let's do this again soon, man. It's good to see y'all faces, man. I love y'all boys.
Thank you.
Maybe we can do it live. We'd love to see you live, man. So
yeah, I'm in LA because I work in Denver during the week, and I come home to LA. I just left obviously this weekend, so I'm in LA every weekend. So we'll figure it out. Brilliant. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon, buddy.
We'll go to the bar.
Yeah, I'm down. All right,
cheers,
man.
Bro. Peace. Cheers, bro.